Termicide presents Lodman.
And welcome to Login, the podcast from Termisoc, the University of Plymouth Computing Society. With me today are Ben Ali.
Hello.
Rich Jeffrey. Oh, sorry, hello. For 1 week only, our sound man, Chris.
Hello.
And of course myself, Dan Cossa. And we're here today to yap about some of the interesting geeky things that have happened over the last fortnight, such as they are. But first, we're going to start with a enhancement of one of last time's stories. Rich?
Jack Thompson calls Manhunt 2 Wii a murder training device. This is a rocking story. It's from QJ.net. Of course, Manhunt 2 is coming out. It's coming out for the Wii, as you can tell from that statement. And basically, he has sent this letter, an open letter, to a Florida governor called Charlie Crist and the Attorney General Bill McCollum. And here is a quote from the letter. Florida retailers are scheduled to sell a very violent video game called Manhunt 2, which will be available, remarkably, for play, in inverted commas, on the kids-friendly Nintendo Wii gaming platform. The Wii device does not utilize traditional push-button game controllers, but instead utilizes hand-motion-held capture devices. It is a training device.
For death!
For death.
Nintendo Wii 2.
Now, I suppose we're of the conclusion that Jack Thompson is an ass.
Yeah. To be fair, the original Manhunt was a horrifically violent game, as I'm assuming is going to be its sequel.
Yes.
But I believe murder training device might be taking it
just a little harsh.
Yes. Another story that pops up that was came out fairly similar time to this was, of course, violence causes video games.
Very to be fair, it's not like murder is something you need much practice at. You don't, you know, get up early in the morning and go and practice killing people and then after 6 months of this go and kill them. Generally, you just kill them.
Well, a spontaneous thing.
Well, you could go into the kitchen, go get a knife, stab a pumpkin, go. You know, get yourself in the mood before heading out.
But, you know, that's considered, you know, tradition and fun for the family, at least in the USA.
Do you realise it's comments like that that are going to get us a cease and desist letter from Jack Thompson?
Oh, Jack Thompson is a twat.
But the best thing of all, Jack Thompson is, of course, banned from the UK.
Oh, of course.
Is he?
Or something like that. Well, no, he's...
He's been made illegal. He's certainly been banned from discussing
anything with Take-Two, as discussed in the last podcast.
Jack Thompson causes violence.
Oh, yes.
Against Jack Thompson.
I can actually imagine that Jack Thompson does actually cause violence. I can imagine people getting really riled and kind of beating the crap out of somebody.
Like Jack Thompson.
Well, to be honest, if you consider the, as we talked about last week, his arguments with Penny Arcade, if anything, he actually promoted goodwill to charity and game development. So, you know, maybe he's there for a good reason too.
Inadvertently.
Yes.
Didn't he threaten to sue them for donating money to charity?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, most definitely. I was gone.
Really upstanding citizen there.
At the end of the article, it mentions that the Attorney General said that this may be a big problem. But it says that Super Smash Bros. Brawl might also suffer from the same fate, as it encourages kids to beat the crap out of their friends and throw them out the stage. But Nintendo is not fazed, stating that games simply have different audience, just like movies, televisions and books. Don't let the kids touch Manhunt 2? Problem solved! The thing is that, as I mentioned the last one, the things that Jack Thompson is saying, to start off with, were fairly logical, like introduce a better way of preventing kids from getting their hands on it, because in the UK you're not the ESRB ratings, not ESRB, PEGI ratings, are actually classified as a rating system, and usually games shops and things like Virgin and HMV sort of stand up to that. They actually do approach people.
Yes, small children are not allowed to buy 18-year-old games, for example.
One issue, though.
What, is like
that...
Mario?
Yes. What? You've not seen that game. It's.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
Picking wild flowers and squashing mushrooms. That's illegal, you know, Ben.
Mm. One problem I can see, though, is that I was walking through shopping. Morrison's, in fact, and looking at the magazine racks, and I think it was like Xbox 360 magazine or something like that, had a 18 rated game in it. But because it's a magazine, I don't know whether anyone would really pay that much attention to it. Whether whether shops have that sort of policy when it comes to magazines.
Well, you know, they're advertising something that's. Surely that should be the same situation as advertising cigarettes or alcohol.
Well, the thing was, is because it's on... I think, actually, no, it was PC Gamer. It was basically... It just came with an 18-rated cover disc.
Yeah, well, if it's aimed at a general audience, it should not have age-limited...
Or at least highly aged.
Well, yeah.
So high.
Or otherwise, the magazine itself should be age-limited.
Well, no, that's what the thing was. The magazine had like a wrap over it, like you yeah. get, and an 18 BBFC logo on it, but fairly small.
And would the average news agent notice? It's not their job to watch who's buying most magazines anyway.
It's not like the machine will prompt them like it does with buying wine or all rated video games. And
does the rating system actually cover magazines? I thought they were just an advertisement or things like that.
Well, no, because it was a BBFC rated demo.
Oh, I see.
The rating has to be on the magazine as well. The thing is, they can't sell the demo disc and the magazine separately, so therefore it fairly scuppers it.
You imagine the prompt on the till. Are you sure you wish to sell this morally ambiguous product?
Okay, now we've got that bit of news out of the way. I think we'll move on to the lovin's and hating. So, Ben, what have you been loving and hating?
I've been loving Led Zeppelin. Basically everything Led Zeppelin have ever done. In fact,
everything. That's...
Well, certainly the first four albums plus a few of the ones after that. Specifically How the West Was Won, which is one of the best live performances I've ever heard, at least. And I strongly recommend you go and listen to it and send Jimmy Page your money.
Are you including some Page and Plant terms?
I don't know much Page and Plant stuff, but certainly Led Zeppelin.
Robert Plant lived next to one of my old mates, actually. I have met Robert Plant. He's a cool guy.
Nice.
He ran a buffet.
What, a bouffant?
No, not a bouffant, it was a buffet.
He was kind of bouffant, though.
Yes,
he was a little bouffant.
Not as maybe much as Roger Daltrey, though.
Maybe it was a bouffant buffet. Yeah.
And I've been hating the University of Plymouth's wireless network because after spending about 10-15 minutes trying to get a DHCP address, I then couldn't get any DNS to work. So it's basically completely useless, which is very annoying because it took them quite a while to get wireless working on this bloody laptop. And
well, I remember the fairly early on, back in the days when you were still running Gentoo on your
indeed.
On your laptop.
Well, I spent months.
Yeah, I remember you sitting in what is now Illusion, just playing with your laptop, trying to get the wireless working.
Yes.
And it looks like some things never change.
Well, the thing is, now it works, and it's definitely their problem.
with the advent of EduRoam, it has got a darn sight easier to get laptops
true.
Onto the network.
You know, actual standard protocols for connection and authentication.
I like EduRoam because you can connect to the same EduRoam network in Norway, I believe, than...
And Iceland, in fact.
Yes, all with your Earth
Basically
credentials.
All over Europe.
That's
and
nice.
A few places outside Europe, I think Singapore. The University of Singapore, you can walk in, sit in their student union and connect to the network. And use your University of Plymouth ID.
I love that. I haven't heard about EduRoam. I know that I've seen it pop up occasionally, but...
Yeah, it's a good service.
It's mainly Janet's and the whatever the European-wide one and the other equivalents of Janet, but...
I was going to say JASC. No, that's the maker of PaintShop Pro.
Yeah, good program.
But yes, them, whoever they are.
Right. So we're loving EduRoam, but hating the University of Plymouth's particular implementation.
Yes, yes. Actually, to get set up instructions for Linux, I actually ended up going to the University of Tromsø's website.
Nice.
Because they had instructions for Linux, and I couldn't find many other places that did. Apart from a Romanian university, which also had them.
In Romanian, or...?
Well, obviously the config file was...
All the comments would be in Romanian. How very racist.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Anyway, Rich, loving and hatings.
Right. Okay, I've actually got two lovin's. The first one is...
Rich is just full of love.
Oh, yeah. Firstly, sequential art. It's a webcomic done by a bloke named Johnny Jack, who also does stuff on Beta, which is B3TA, but anyway. Sequential art is basically the story of Art, who works for a design company, Cat, who lives with him, who is a professional photographer and a cat, Pip, who is a penguin who's obsessed about comics and World of Lorecraft, so Land of Lorecraft, and yes, his former college buddy, Scarlet, who at somewhere in the series they found in the loft, who she's a squirrel who is incredibly intelligent, but to look at her she's incredibly stupid. A very good example is when she licks a battery.
Smooth.
And yes, she lives in the loft. And more recently you've had characters moving in from other comics that he does. In fact, the comic Pippingrad and Jack and the Denzians, who basically wanted to take over the world from their basement. It's not good. Yeah, so that's the first thing I've been loving. Why have you actually looked at it?
I'm not much into webcomics because they annoy me when they don't update regularly. Yeah. Bastard Mega Tokyo. Bastard Fred Gallagher, or whatever your name is.
It's been done by Hawk this week of Apple Geek, so it's been done every day.
Sobs.
I read a hell of a lot of webcomics, and Sequential is on my long list of webcomics I haven't read yet. But it's on the list and will be read soon.
To be honest, I find it far better than some of the ones that have been recommended to me. I'm not in the kind of mentality to get things like PhD comics.
See, I'm waiting for the day when Dan's list of comics he does read is longer than the list of comics he doesn't.
Yeah. It's like Terry Pratchett, he's signed more books than he hasn't. You know, it's more valuable to have an unsigned Terry Pratchett.
Oh yes, and the second thing I'm loving at the moment is Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, the serial.
These are awesome. Just beyond compare.
Essentially, it's a product made by Weetabix. It's a box of skulls and crossbones.
Made of multigrains.
Made of multigrains, like wheat and oats and things. Tastes a bit like Cheerios.
It probably is basically identical to Cheerios.
Chris has brought it to us. But it's actually very good for you. And does have a lovely thing on the back that says, "Can you find the meeting place of the 9 pirate lords?" Which I've yet to try. But I'm sure that we'll eventually work it out.
A lunch break task.
A breakfast task. Ah, yeah, and it even has the pirate code on the other side of it. But to be honest, I'm probably going to say that the branded cereal is almost as good as the film.
dangerous statement there, Rich.
Yes. Right. Hating.
Hating. I am hating the adverts you get at cinemas for buying fake DVDs.
And Dan's making stabbing motions there.
Formerly, the cinema, it's the experience that counts, which informs you that it's better at the cinema, despite you sitting in a cinema watching an advert.
Obviously, you know
telling
this already.
You to be in the cinema. It's ridiculous. And more commonly, actually, the new one, which I saw with Ocean's 13 on Wednesday, was Knock Off Nigel buys Knock Off DVDs.
He gave his girlfriend a watch he found in the street.
And he always scrounges his rounds off other people, and so on and so forth. It's basically... I can imagine it being the most irritating advert to lie on the list. And in fact, actually, I'm starting to get the Mac adverts are starting to irritate me now. The most because the same ones get played, and also because I think that Mitchell and Webb are not quite as good as Don Hodgman and the other guy.
See, what the impression I get from the Mac versus PC adverts is that Mac users are twats, PC users are twats, they're just twats in different ways.
I can get that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just sticking with Debian.
Makes sense. Back to you, Dan.
Yes, my lovings and hatings. Well, I've been getting some hot F1 loving this week.
As in the help key.
Well, no, I'm afraid that I like sports, you see. Not real sports, this is motor racing. But... we're right in the middle of the F1 season at the moment, and if you missed the Canadian Grand Prix last weekend, then you missed an absolute classic race. Awesome. Now, I have particular lovings for a man named Nick Heidfeld. Who I have been following for a long time. He's a fantastic racing driver.
Does he know about this?
I can't remember when he started.
Years ago now, I forget. But he's finally made podium. He came second at the Grand Prix, followed by Alex Wurz, of all people, in third. So, nice one, guys. I mean, it was a hell of a race. So many people went out.
Who was the guy who flipped his car?
Robert Kubica flipped his car about 20 times.
And then drove home from hospital the next
day.
Yes,
next day he came out with a broken leg and drove home. And he's saying he wants to race in Indianapolis this weekend, but he's told to sit down and stop being a twat, basically.
Fantastic.
But it'd still be a good race this Sunday. I recommend you watch. But
I'm so disappointed that I missed it. I'm trying to get myself back into Formula One.
Well, it's actually beginning to be worth watching. The last couple of years have been a bit slow, and it's finally really picking up as the teams really start.
Yeah.
Are all getting level, and the tracks are starting to get there, and the rules are finally not batshit insane anymore. It's good. It's getting good.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, the best thing to do is probably watch the highlights if you're not that interested in. Because the problem is that. Formula 1 is about 2 hours long, usually an hour and a half, 2 hours of solid racing, and sometimes not a lot happens. To start off with, you're probably best off getting into the highlights.
Well, if you really want action, go watch either GP2 or Formula 3, because they drive like they're nut jobs on those races. They're good. If you
drive like they're nut jobs, or they drive because they're nut jobs?
Well, their cars are cheaper, so they can get away with it. They're slower races, but there's a lot more overtaking. The other one is, of course, if you get Sky Sports, is to watch the A1 races.
Yes.
Now, they're the alternative to the F1s.
National.
Yes, and they're good races, but, of course, you need to have Sky to get them, which is a pain in the backside. Anyway, what I've been hating is packing, because I'm moving house in a matter of days. And all my stuff is in boxes, and it's an absolute pain not being able to do anything except for pester Ben. He loves it, really, obviously, but it's still pretty aggravating.
Ben loves anything.
To be honest, you really should have crated things.
Yes. Wrapping things up in plastic bags and duct tape. Not the best way, but it works, kind of.
See, this is the advantage of having most of your music and films on hard disk.
Yes, I just have boxes and boxes of rubbish.
The only problem is that if you've got a laptop, you fill up your hard drive so quickly.
Yes.
Indeed.
Most because laptop hard drives tend to be tiny. This one's only got, 30 gig in it.
Anyway, Anyway, that's enough but, lovins and hatins. Now, Ben, you're first on our list today.
My first story is about, yet again, the GPL version 3.
Ah, wonderful.
Linus Torvalds has been involved in a big rant about it and basically come out and said that he doesn't agree with the principles that the Free Software Foundation seems to be following for the next version of the general public license.
Just to explain, what is version 3 of the GPL?
Version 3,
for those who...
basically, the current version used by about 50% of free software is version 2 or 2.1 or so. And version 3 is going to add things like clauses to discourage software patents and digital rights management. And
I can see that's going to be a major hassle.
It is, and Linus has come out and said that he doesn't want the Linux kernel to be under the version 3. Because one of the things that they're trying to avoid with the version 3 is what RMS calls TiVoization, which is, if you've heard of TiVo, they basically their product is a embedded Linux box that you connect up to your TV, and
it was one of the first decent PVR boxes, basically.
Yeah. And basically, the problem with it is, as far as the Free Software Foundation is concerned, although you've got free software on there, it's completely free software. You can't modify it, because if you try to modify it, it won't run. It'll only run the version of Linux provided by TiVo. And while this is perfectly okay as far as the GPL version 2 is concerned, because you're not distributing modified binaries, so you don't have to distribute source code, it's not okay as far as RMS is concerned. So
it's just silly.
Version 3 wants to make sure that TiVo will have to distribute source code with, or at least an offer for source code with their product.
Just to sort of reiterate, Richard Stallman is an idiot. I'm pretty certain he doesn't believe in commercial ventures. He doesn't believe in money. I bet you he just doesn't believe...
Money? What is this thing you speak of?
Yeah, basically, Richard Stallman is what the Americans love to say, back in the 50s, a communist.
Oh. Indeed. Well, he's not exactly a communist, but he is somewhat...
Oh no, he wants to be a communist, but he grew up in a society which said communism was bad, so therefore he invented the Free Software Foundation.
Well, I admire a lot of what he's done, but he does tend to be somewhat extreme sometimes.
He's like the Jack Thompson of the Free Software World.
I wouldn't go that far, but... what Torvalds is saying is that he chose the GPL version 2 because it worked just as he wanted. And he doesn't think that the license needs improving, and he is opposed to changing the license of the kernel to version 3. Which, to be honest, is pretty impractical anyway, since there's about, I believe, 400 people who own copyright of part of the kernel. So
you'd have to ask everybody to do it.
And, you know, some of them might be perfectly happy to do so, but not all of them are, and you'd need permission from all of them.
So you're basically, the only solution would be to split the kernel down into the version that works on the GPL2 and the version that runs on the GPL3.
Well,
because there's
the current discussion is about dual licensing, and I don't know exactly all the intricacies of dual licensing, but it would get certainly very complicated.
Well, it would work on the principle that it would only happen if all the code was GPL3 compatible, and I'm betting that isn't actually the case.
I suspect people like IBM, who have contributed things, may be a little unhappy about the patent clauses. I don't know exactly their opinions on patents, but another of the things that version 3 is supposed to be dealing with are the software patent threats to free software projects.
Anyway, I think the changing licenses on the kernel, as you said, is a damn near impossible task without a figurehead such as Linus Torvalds to spearhead it. I mean, it's his damn name on the thing, so he should have some kind of say. But at the end of the day, this is something that's going to play out as the GPL3 actually becomes used, because as far as I know, it's still working
It hasn't been published. Yes, like I say, it's still in draft.
I suspect we need to see it working in the wild before we can really say how it will actually apply to things.
What Torvalds has said here is the kernel license covered the kernel. It does not cover bootloaders and hardware. And as far as I'm concerned, people who make their own hardware can design it any which way they want. Whether that means booting only a specific kernel or sharks with lasers, I don't care.
It seems
booting sharks with lasers. Fantastic.
Apparently,
that would be awesome. It does seem absurd to me to try and force TiVo to allow people to hack around with their software and then potentially their hardware. They're producing a commodity product. Then we don't. Forcing them to change their hardware just to cater for 0.001% of the population who wishes to hack around with it.
If you want a PBR box with, you know, that you can hack around with as much as you want, get a cheap Dell or whatever and stick Myth TV on it.
Actually, that is a good, interesting side note. I'm pretty certain that in Myth TV there might be some bits of it that are binary only.
I don't know. I can't.
I can imagine it might. There might be a few.
There are plenty of other variations anyway. You can screw around as much as you want. TiVo is not the only way forward.
Yeah. If TiVo wants a cost effective way of dealing with GPL lovers of any kind, then why not just offer them the opportunity to get factory produced ones on cost, which would be about $2,000 each or something stupid.
Yeah.
Yes. It's actually odd that TiVo never really caught on in the UK. I remember seeing one years and years ago, probably about 2000, in a Dixon's somewhere.
It is a very American thing, but then again, in America, things like the cable network and Sky are much more prevalent than they are over here.
It's true. I suppose actually it's because TiVo didn't work with Sky, essentially because Sky. It's the same problem with video recorders. Essentially, you have to do quite a lot of fiddling about to make sure that your machine is going to record what you want. And I think that basically Sky kicked them out of the market by introducing Sky Plus. This is the reason why PVR boxes are not...
Well, PVR boxes are rising slowly in this country. As you say, Sky Plus really kicked it off over here, but...
As is... the Virgin one.
Virgin Media have recently done their Virgin Plus box, whatever the damn thing's called. And the
BT Plus.
Yeah, probably. And the BT Vision box. You can buy TV from BT now.
Yeah.
They do a nice PVR box as well. It's rising. We're slowly catching up with our partners across the pond. Right, now I've got a lovely little piece about morality again.
Wonderful.
About Google. Now, people who know me, I've been a Google advocate for a long time. I suspect many geeks were back in the heyday when they were but a couple of guys in a university bedroom somewhere when the waves were ruled by Yahoo and Excite and people like that.
Oh, how to be everyone fair. Remembers their first time with Google and going... That was quick.
Exactly.
Did that just work?
And they have cultivated a massive community of followers. And nowadays, Google is practically a household name. I believe they actively campaigned against to Google being added to the dictionary, but essentially to say Google something means to search the web. However, in the last year or two...
I'd just like to point out for Google's sake that we don't use that word. Please don't sue us.
Of course.
Yeah.
It should be noted, though, over the last couple of years, Google have become a massive, massive company. They have, and I've got some figures here, They account for 65% of web searches. Their only real competitor is Yahoo with 21%.
And Yahoo News, a Google engine.
Of course they switched over from Inktomi. And the only people after that, MSN, 8.4%, MSN Live, or whatever it's called nowadays. Ask.com, 3.9%. AOL follows with a rather paltry 0.35%. Only 2%.
Good old AOL.
Yes, only 2% other search engines. And it's quite a difficult time to actually name another search engine. But the problems with Google recently have risen with regards to privacy. Now, privacy has become a rather sore topic around the world at the moment. And a report released, I think it was last week, by Privacy International, placed companies such as Facebook, social networking sites like that, fairly near the bottom. But the big problem was Google was smack bang at the bottom, mostly due to rather a lax privacy policy. And also some quibbling over how long Google keeps hold of information about your searches. Basically, it appears that Google are rather going back on their don't be evil policy.
Well, don't be evil is always kind of vague.
Especially when you've got a company of this size that has to deal with this much information.
Well, I think there's a secret half of that motto. It's don't be evil, delegate evil.
Well, they've come under fire several times recently over the whole China fiasco, for example, and Yahoo came in under fire there as well.
Well, I think most of the top search engines.
I think it's hard to do well with versions. When the Chinese government is involved, it's hard to do well on privacy issues.
Basically, they came under fire, and it's a case of they're losing their golden boy image. And it's something that appears to continue. I mean, a news article released yesterday was that Google was desperately trying to claim that they are covered by the Data Retention Directive, which basically means they have to keep information so that the American terrorist hunters, the FBI, can keep track of who's searching for what. And Google's been desperately trying to claim that this is why we keep our data for so long. They've been told that this doesn't quite apply in Europe, and you've got to get rid of that data. Now, according to their privacy notice, Google will keep specific information about your searches in their server logs for up to 24 months, between 18 and 24 months. So that's 2 years. So when Chris searches for Joe Wiley, that's still coming up in 2 years, and Google use this information in much the same way that Tesco use information about your shopping baskets to improve their searches.
So you're saying if you lost a particular porn picture that you liked, up to 2 years later, they can find it for you again. I think we should find
I don't know if it quite works like that, because imagine the size of their server log.
Yes. It's very much along the lines of a data mining approach. This isn't a personal thing, but personal information is being kept regardless.
Yeah.
Okay, and lots of people don't like this. Now, Google have, again, also tried to cut back by saying they're going to keep things for 18 months and no longer now. That's still a long time.
Mm-hmm. I think that Google are starting... The only reason why Google are starting to lose their privacy... they come at the bottom of this thing that was being discussed. That my brain is just suddenly warbling out of my head. It's down to their whole policy, which they appear to be building upon, of being able to search everything. The whole idea of... Well, it starts with Google Books, and the way they basically allowed all these books to be searched and read... And all the book and quite a lot of book publishers coming back and going, you can't do this.
Hey, those are our books.
They were quoted as being playing loose and fast with copyright law, I believe.
Yes,
I think that's putting it lightly.
And you have the problems with the overhead Google Maps search, because you'll be able to see in people's gardens, you'll be able to see cars, and so on and so forth. But more importantly, in the past month or two, you've got Google Street View. That's essentially a photographic record of everything on the street driven by this little car that's got eight cameras on top of it.
I maintain the best job ever is just to drive around the streets of San Francisco with a gigantic glowing orb on your roof. But yes.
Taking pictures of people picking their nose.
Exactly.
Maybe, well, actually, there's a similar job available, which is the one for Navitech, the company who do mapping software and software. Which is basically to drive around the country in a bright orange camper van and just make and basically record driving along roads. Yes. And then it gets sent to India where they check to make sure it lines up with the maps where you knew things.
And you basically haven't just been driving festival to festival.
Yeah. But the best thing of all is that it's actually done by a girlfriend and boyfriend team.
Ah, yes. Being paid to drive across America. Loads of fun. Street View has become under quite a few attacks recently. Now, first, I must emphasise, if you haven't used the Street View feature, I recommend you do, because it's loads of fun. There is lots of random crap you can find on there. I don't know if you found any favourite pictures.
No, well, there was a list of favourite pictures available on the internet. That, and again, that's what I was flicking back to regarding privacy. Because the issue is that if you drive along, you might catch somebody doing something which, you know, might not be what they want to be broadcast across the world. For example, there were some great ones like the guy walking out of a strip club and the woman getting into a car and basically her trousers being slightly slipped down and her thong showing.
My and personal favourite was the guy taking a slash by the side of the road.
One person who showed up was a fairly well-known privacy lawyer, right? Sure. Very active in this kind of field, and he apparently contacted Google regarding getting his image removed, and they want, you know, photo ID, etc., etc., passports, and I can't remember exactly what he mentioned, but they do want quite a lot of personal information from you to prove that it is a picture of you that they've got on this site.
Well, yes, because they don't want, the problem is they don't want it to be exploited, essentially. Well, yeah. Saying this image is I want this image taken down now, etc., etc. Now the thing is that you could be anybody.
Well, yeah,
and then you'd end up with completely blacked out Street View. But the other issue of privacy regarding Street View is the fact that you can look into people's houses of a sort. Because there was a great story in New York Times, I think it was, about this woman who was looking at Street View and noticed her cat sitting on its perch in the window. And other people saying that some washing is out there and you can see whose cars, you know, whose cars belong to who.
Debian.
Yeah.
New sport, pet spotting.
Well, no, there's big problems regarding people stealing pets.
Ew.
There's pet napping. Like, actually, the one in the UK where Bruce Forsyth's daughter had her dog stolen or something like that. And they went on GMTV.
And Debian developer Joey Hess mentions about social engineering. How much easier would it be to convince someone that you're somewhere you're not if you can just go on Street View and describe a scene halfway across the world from this photo?
It's not hard to be Kevin Mitnick when you've got photos.
Well, exactly. If you can get photos of absolutely anywhere in the city of San Francisco, and you're just sat in New York trying to con someone in Silicon Valley, then, you know, it's
scary stuff.
Yeah.
To be brutally honest, from my personal point of view, being able to see into my front room, it really isn't an issue.
Because your front room is,
it's a little embarrassing.
It's full of crap and has a Blink-182 poster on the wall. That's the kind of situation we're dealing with here. However, a New York assemblyman, Mike Giannaris, he was quoted the other day with a topic that's rather closer to America's heart at the moment, and that's, of course, the problem of terrorism. Now, it sounds silly and paranoid and all the other wonderful words we like to bandy around about America, but at the end of the day, services like this allow people to have very good views of important buildings, important political buildings, important network buildings like police stations, fire stations, power plants and things like this, all of which could be used for marking for identity theft, but also blowing the place up.
Especially now you've got Street View, where you can look and see that there's a fire hydrant or a bin or something in this specific place, or public toilet just there, which...
So I was just thinking imagine ringing on the doorbell of the White House and saying, can we just drive around your drive? We've got the Google Street View car.
Yes, I suspect they might disagree to that one, but there is talk of blanking such buildings out entirely.
Famously, Microsoft started blanking out bits of...
Yes, Area 51 is missing on the Terra server, which is... Well, I don't know what it's called now, but Terra server from years ago.
I think it's now just called Virtual Earth now.
Really?
Yes. I just find it odd that most of these buildings they're talking about being security risks are actually public buildings. You know, you can walk around and have a decent gander because you're a tourist.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that there are many, many of these such buildings. I'm just picking some obvious ones off. But the other thing is, of course, that you can watch these without being spotted on CCTV. Mm. Later on, after an incident, people can be spotted marking a place quite easily, because you obviously have to come in the range of CCTV to mark a place, really. If you can do it from the comfort of my bedroom, then you're suddenly anonymous.
Ooh.
That, the possible exception of the 18 to 24
month server. Are you offering me the comfort of your bedroom to do this?
Your bedroom's open to me all the time, Chris. Anyway, all of this article has been actually leading up to one very important point, where yesterday a man named Michael Vandermeer, a blogger...
When Dan says yesterday, that's actually yesterday from... Is that...?
No, that's Thursday, 14th of June, yesterday.
So 2 days ago.
Yes.
Because today's Friday.
Yes, this was published Thursday the 14th, today's Friday the 15th.
And so yesterday...
Oh, I see, it starts yesterday. Yeah, but okay.
Yeah.
We'll edit that out. Michael Vandermeer, blogger, challenged people to avoid not only Google, but the top five search engines, Google, Yahoo, MSN, Ask, and just AOL, for 18 entire hours. Now, it's important that when he says avoid, he doesn't mean go to the park for a day. He means do a normal working day using search engines, without using those top five. Now, I challenge you, can you even name a search engine that is outside those top five?
AltaVista, although it's been left by the wayside.
Exactly, AltaVista is almost gone. Excite isn't a search engine anymore. Exactly.
Metabrawler.
True.
Dogpile, which uses all...
Dogpile doesn't count because it's... conglomerate of other search engines.
Anyway, Michael Vandermeer, he provided a list of actually over 100 alternative search engines, which is quite a few.
Off the top of his head?
Two of my personal favourites were Gigablast, which is one I came across a while ago, which is what Google used to be like, being very simple and so on and so forth. Not a particularly big base of results, but it's still pretty nippy. And the other one is Quintura, which takes an alternative approach to searching. I recommend you try these out. But basically, a lot of people just completely gave up on the plan. A man named David Berkowitz claimed that the top five are the top five for a reason. Now, I don't know about you, but people use Google a lot.
I'm sorry, I've just tried out Gigablast.
Yes.
Oh, there it goes. I apologise, that took 30 seconds.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I went onto Google, typed it.
Yes, Google is...
Google, pop, there you go, it's there.
This is the point that David Berkowitz is making. It's the best because it is the best. It is still a fantastic search.
Would you like to explain your search results, Rich?
What? Why a big piss? But unfortunately, it was the only thing I think of.
Piss?
How it does... the first thing that came up was Piss Christ.
Isn't that a band?
No, apparently it's a picture. Yeah. From 1989, done by Andres Serrano. I'm going to take a look at it.
The one I know of is Scroogle.org, which basically anonymises Google results, so they can't record your IP or whatever. It's all completely randomised.
Strangely, if you put Scroogle.com on an MSN window instant messenger, it won't send.
Really?
It doesn't even register it as going through.
That's strange.
My point being, not to make jokes about these kind of things, but everyone does use Google. Full stop. Basically,
the problem is that Google is the ultimate search engine for everything, really. Like, if you need to find something like a library type text, you've got Google Scholar.
Yes,
and
which is a great
source. I used Google Maps 3 times today. Tried to go onto Windows Live, and it's blocked. And yet, Live is blocked, but mostly down to its probably down to its MSN Messenger related material, which is annoying.
Basically, what I'm saying is that Google are bad. I still love them, but they're losing their shiny edge. But no one seems to be able to have a worthwhile alternative in the meantime.
Well, Google is still the biggest company to say the best company to work for, as you know, being claimed by many of its staff.
Yes,
it's probably second only to sort of companies like Apple. Well, Google is worldwide.
It is quite famous for being a very friendly place to work, like getting 20% of your time just for the stuff. Right, so moving swiftly on, because we've been ranting for blooming ages. Rich, what have you got for us?
Okay, well, EA. And more importantly, EA at the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference. Now, at the Developers Conference, you had the keynote speech by Steve Jobs. One of the first things that occurred was they invited the CEO of EA.
How you doing? Nice to be here.
How are you?
Thank you, Steve. I have 2 teenage daughters. They live on MacBook. I have friends in the music business, in the movie business, in the photography business, in the graphic design business. They live on OS X. Our CTO at Electronic Arts lives on Mac, and we're seeing EA technologists move to Mac in droves. And what do they all want? What do they keep asking for in addition to a cinema display? They want to go into an Apple store and they want to see all the latest EA games simultaneous released with all the other platforms. And so I'm here today to announce we are going to rectify the situation. Starting in July, we're going to bring 4 of our biggest titles to run under OS X.
And he announced that a load of EA games were coming to the Mac, essentially naming games like Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix to come out in time for the movie, Need for Speed Carbon, Battlefield 2142, Command & Conquer 3, and Madden 08 and Tiger Woods 08. Basically big EA games. However, people have realised there's something a bit awry here, because what they're actually introducing is a program called Cider. Now, Cider, not a lot of people may have heard of it, but they might have heard of the company Transgaming, who also make a product called Cediga. Essentially, what Cider is it's a application layer allowing Windows software to run on an Intel Mac.
It's similar to Wine, in fact, I think.
Cediga is based off of Wine.
Cediga certainly is.
Yeah. And, yes. So, essentially, people were expecting a Mac port, but they're not getting one. They're getting the Windows version with a bit of jiggery-pokery.
Now, this primarily leads to problems with compatibility and, most importantly, speed, which is a big part of gaming, obviously.
Yeah. Well, compatibility probably won't be a problem because they are releasing it with the games, so they will make sure it works properly with each game. You know, it's fairly easy job to do. It's a bit like when LucasArts release things like ScumVM with their games, because I think they have done that. And also the good old Bleem PlayStation emulator did for a short time before they were eventually killed off by Sony's constant tirade of lawsuits. Was to release a few ones that worked for particular PlayStation games, like Gran Turismo 2 and so on and so forth. And so essentially, it's going to work regarding compatibility. There might be a few bugs because most companies don't bother error-checking. Like the problem with Battlefield 2142 when it first came out, was that it crashed on quite a lot of machines. And was fairly buggy, and so on and so forth. So I can imagine EA probably not making particularly good and well-compatible games. But more importantly, speed. If anyone's actually tried running games on a different platform that's not is not originally intended for, you do see a huge drop in speed. Looking at the footage that they showed of Harry Potter on at the conference, it did look a bit jerky. But then again, of course, we are watching it on a stream cut, a stream of the keynote speech from all the way over here. So we don't. I can't really say whether it held up very well.
Bear in mind that games are generally fairly intensive on things like that and fairly speed reliant, and so any kind of extra layer like that is going to be a serious problem for performance. Like you say, we can't really tell, but it's not likely to do us any favours, certainly.
Well, exactly. It's not going to help the promotion of Mac variations of games. Basically, all it's going to mean is that you're going to get quite a lot of Windows games with cider chucked in with it that makes Mac versions. And I don't know whether it's going to be actually a good thing.
Well, in my opinion, simply getting games onto Macs means you get a Mac market, and that will promote more pure Mac games.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, whatever. I think the bit that really got to me was that we were told one thing, that we were getting Mac games, but what's actually happened is that we're getting a hack job.
Yeah.
It's the lying, you know. It's not building the relationship here. It's disappointing that Steve Jobs can come up on stage and push this big thing, but what is actually happening is just something that's being chucked together in developers' houses at the last minute, effectively. Mm. I think it's more that gets to me, rather than the fact that the games are coming over in this particular way.
But we've got to also look at the other sort of side of the spectrum. Also at the Worldwide Developers Conference, just after the EA bloke came and told everyone how great life was going to be, the bloke from, depending on how you want to pronounce it, ID, how we mostly pronounce the company's name, or ID, how Steve Jobs likes to pronounce it.
The psychological thing.
Yeah, well, no, ID sounds a lot better name, in my opinion. I'm actually thinking that maybe it is meant to be ID, because the guy didn't correct him. Essentially, they turned up on stage to show off their tech demo, which is they called ID Tech 5. Apparently, they built this thing in 10 days, and it was scorching. It looked really good. And they said, actually, one of the things he says, it's got a few bugs to it. If you give me 4 more days, it'd be brilliant. But this thing really did fly, and I can if ID can promote positive thinking towards Mac as a platform, then who knows?
Well, that's the thing. If you're really taking advantage of the Mac platform, you're going to get some pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's a lot more, you can rely on it having certain hardware or a small range of hardware rather than PCs where you have to.
You could have anything in there.
There's so much variation between PCs.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even have to bother with the minimum requirements section on the factory.
Well, all you'd have to say is
Mac.
A Mac that better than such and such.
Yeah.
Well, an Intel Mac, maybe, or whatever.
I think Mac gaming is a good thing, and I can't wait for it to happen, even if it does happen via Cider. Microsoft have such a monopoly over gaming on PCs, partly because things like DirectX are good technologies, whatever people say about them, and their continuing increase in dominance in the console gaming sector, not a battle that's won by any stretch of the imagination. It's nice to see them being attacked on other sides, especially for users of alternative operating systems like my fellows to my left and right. Are there any developments, do we know of, in, was it Leopard? It's coming out later this year.
Oh, yes, there was a... most of the keynote was taken up by discussions about Leopard and how fancy and shiny it is. I'm actually pleased to announce that it will run on my aging iBook.
Good. Your iBook G4 there.
Yes. Well, to be honest, it's not that old, but the problem is because they've switched over to Intel, it's like running away, essentially. One concern is it does look a bit Vista-y. There's a bit more... There's quite a lot of glass in there, quite a lot of 3D action. Like a crossbreed of... Weather. I can't remember what Compiz and Beryl combined is now called. Is it just called the Open Desktop?
I believe it's just called Compiz now. But
I forgot if it's called the Open Desktop.
I don't know. I don't tend to keep track of that.
Well, long story short, I don't think this is anything that we could complain at Apple about. Apple have always had the shiniest desktop. They like their shiny stuff.
Yes. Well, as proved by the ISS slideshow that comes came with mine.
I think, arguably, it's Microsoft following Apple rather than the other way around.
Yeah, true.
So, I don't think we can complain.
Yeah. Well, it was David Poe of the New York Times had this a great video, which I do recommend people try and hunt down, of how Vista, you say, Vista didn't steal anything from macOS. For example, on macOS, you have in the top corner the Spotlight, and Spotlight is allows you to search your hard drive. In Vista, they also have a very similar search system, which is on the start bar.
Yes.
Which basically you can type in what you're hunting for, and it will bring it up. Now, here's the key difference. Now, on macOS, Spotlight is in the top right corner of the screen. On Windows Vista, it's the bottom left screen. Is it completely different?
Yes.
The other crucial difference is that Apple aren't being sued over their search function. That's true. Okay, Ben, so what have you got for us now?
Okay, well, I was browsing Dig for a topic to discuss, and I came across an item entitled The Hottest Female Podcasters of 2000.
Whoa.
Now, my girlfriend Lisa is kind of very outspoken about feminism. So
she's outspoken about everything.
Including potatoes.
And Balamori, yes.
And but, intestines.
And Darth Vader.
Hello, yes. Lisa.
Yes, we love you, really.
So this kind of caught my eye, because what kind of ridiculous necessity is there for... Surely it doesn't matter how hot they are. Why? Why?
I'm just going to bring it up so that basically we can see what you're talking about.
Well, let me be devil's advocate here. I understand your approach that, I mean, it's... The simple fact of our profession is that there are very... singly fewer women in than there are men, yes?
Yeah.
That's basic point. It's not that we're it's a sexist profession, it's just simply that more men tend to go into engineering in general.
But it doesn't help that quite a lot of the people involved in it are, you know, rather unsupportive of, you know, anything female. And...
Well, I think...
We have to be honest here. I've actually found the page you're referring to now. The Hottest T-Roll Podcast of 2007. They are glamour shots.
Well,
some of them.
That one's not quite a glamour shot. But what my argument is, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just light-hearted fun. It's not like it's chauvinism or anything like that. It's just, you know...
But why is it necessary? As someone on... Dick has mentioned, does it really matter if these women are hot? The podcasts are informative and entertaining. It doesn't matter if the person is male or female, or hot or ugly. No wonder women shy away from IT if every time they do something it is put into a context based on how they look.
To be honest, that is a bit arrogant sexism, really. You've got to look at it and go, well, yes, it is called The Hottest Female Podcasters, and some people might deem that as slightly sexist. But the kind of people who would go to the effort of saying saying, oh, this is extremely sexist. I don't think I'm going to even look at it. I'm going to hate it.
Yeah.
It's just throwing it completely out of context.
I mean, you've got to remember that the internet started out and for the large part still is a largely faceless medium. So anyone who does put their face out onto the internet, barring Google, obviously, are there for the attention. If it's a glamour shot, it's a glamour shot.
But actually, we've got to be fairly honest here. The one important critical factor of this is that it's podcasters. Now, in case... I'm just checking. The microphone doesn't have a camera down it.
Well, no.
You're right in the sense that who cares? I mean, but the thing is...
Surely people, male and female, have the right to do something and not have it judged on how they look.
This isn't a judgment of the podcast.
Well, no.
This is just a light-hearted blast of the people who happen to be doing
this. It's like best rear of the year for celebrities.
I'm not going to go read this. I'm not going to read out this particular one just because you've got a good smile. Or is that just a random shot? But, you know.
That one is Cam Lewis of Geek Brief TV.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is that actually, looking at these, at least two of them are video podcasters. Because I know for a fact Amber Mac is a video one, as is Geek Brief TV is a video one, as you can tell from the TV suffix. And so is Amanda Congdon, sorry.
The problem is, you may say it's all a bit of light-hearted fun, but the problem is that women tend to get subjected to this, what men think of as light-hearted fun, all the time, and it's not necessary. I couldn't care less what people look like if what they're saying is intelligent, and I don't see why anyone else should.
Mm. It's a fair viewpoint. I mean, it's a fairly hot topic at the moment, sexism in computing. It's seen as the profession is desperately trying to appear more professional.
I don't know if you saw a few months back, a few weeks back, in fact, I did blog about it. There was a lot of talk on the Debian and Ubuntu planet about sexism, but about discrimination in general, and various people coming out and saying they just weren't going to put up with it, male and female, in fact.
The biggest problem is this whole case of discrimination, how companies don't want to appear as companies that will discriminate against anyone else. And I can't remember where I heard it. It might have been something that that Chrissy mentioned. The fact of if something says that they have equal opportunities on a on one of these adverts you get in the paper, it usually means you're far more likely to be employed if you're female or of how they refer to as mixed or different race.
The same.
Admittedly, personally, I believe that there is only one race of humans, which would be the human race.
Well, yeah, to be honest, is just as bad. It's bad that, you know, there's the hottest female podcasters, but it would be just as bad if there's the hottest male podcasters, because what they do is irrelevant, or what they look like is irrelevant to what they do.
Yes. Well, Dig is slightly full of kind of 13-year-old...
Well, yeah, it's like slashed off in that regard.
No offence to Dig readers before we get into something. Because, of course, I am a Dig user. Ben has said that he was searching on Dig, so he uses...
I'm not allowed to use Dig, because otherwise
it wastes too much time for you. But I've seen in the past, like, the hottest female sports presenters and things like that. Unfortunately, it's full of 13-year-old boys who get their jollies from looking at this sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, it's all very childish, and
it is, to be honest, it is incredibly childish, because...
Don't get me wrong, I'm not just limiting it to sexism here. It goes for anything. There is no reason, in most cases, to treat anyone differently on the grounds of what they look like or whatever.
This reminds me of a classic incident, rather removing from computing here, but an F1 race, middle of last season. Now, F1 and motor racing in general tends to be a very male-dominated sport.
Have there ever been any female F1 drivers?
Yes, there's been a couple. But most importantly, there has never been any female pit crew in terms of changing tyres.
I did hear that when I was watching a few weeks back.
Yes, now, I believe it was ITV's Louise Goodman, who is a fantastic presenter and gets... works with the pit crews during the races to talk to the drivers and things like that. But she was given the opportunity to change a tyre, and it was actually quite a big event that this was the first woman ever to change a tyre in a Major League F1 race. Now, it wasn't sexism or anything like that. It has just never occurred to anyone, especially any woman, to actually get down into the pit lane and change a tyre. But it's a good example. It's worth noting that this year there are still no female pit crew.
I saw another post on Planet Ubuntu or Planet Debian or somewhere where Matthew Garrett, who's noted as being fairly outspoken on all manner of subjects, he pointed out that it's deeply, deeply sad that people feel the need to point out that they have women contributing to their free software project.
Yes.
It's sad that there's so few that it's a big deal to be pointed out. And I did have another point that occurred to me. Yorkie bars, this is another thing Lisa's brought up.
Oh, yes.
It's not for girls. Would you get away with marketing a product as not for blacks or not for gays?
It's No. The whole thing is, the reason why they get away with it is what they mean by girls, they mean pansies.
Well,
and they mean what they're referring to is it's designed for boys, men and women, not designed for girls. But the problem is it doesn't come across as that.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's the whole...
Yeah, sure, that might be what they intend, but certainly when I see something saying not for girls, I assume not for women of any age. And it's just not... It's not on.
As you said earlier, it's largely unnecessary, to be honest. Mm.
Now, I can't remember where, but at some point in the life of blogs, I did mention something about basically that feminism has had its toll, that there's no place for something like masculinism.
Well,
in the sense of, because the problem is that there's a limit to how far feminism can go before they start to go to extremes and before they start to...
Well, that's a
and
problem.
In fact, I think it has got to the point where now you have what's known as the independent woman, who basically believes that men are scum. And that's actually now flipping it all over. That's making it so women are being sexist towards men.
Well, I'd argue that that's still only a minority of feminists. They are fairly vocal, and they're certainly the ones that get held up as the kind of stereotype of feminists, which is certainly not helping
Butch
the
lesbian.
Cause.
Yeah.
It doesn't help the cause at all.
Yeah, but what I actually proposed back in May 2005, in fact, in my blog post, warning, product may contain small parts and functional sharp points.
You're naming conventions.
It was on Pizza Hut packaging. What do you expect? I was proposing the whole idea of promoting equality rather than promoting sort of kicking racism out of football or promoting sort of equality towards... Yeah, promoting anti-everything. Instead, just be pro-equality.
Mm. Well,
so essentially, because that's the biggest problem. The problem is that the way that everything gets approached is very in the negative context.
Yeah,
it's very much in the oh, you must stop doing this now.
That group must be catered for rather than everyone must be catered for.
Yeah.
To be honest, if I would love to see some sort of march through the streets like that, promoting equality for everybody. As in just making it promoting rather than demoting everything else.
You get things, like you said, stop racism now, stop homophobia, stop whatever against women in industries or whatever, when you should be encouraging people to treat people equally. Something positive.
Oh, referring to... I heard you mentioned anti-homophobia and so on and so forth. I do recall walking through the police department of the council the other day and seeing hanging over one of the walls, tackling homophobia in secondary schools.
It does kind of bring home how the lengths people are going to stamp this out, as it were. It does seem a bit silly. Okay, well, time's pressing on, so we'll move on to the next topic. Now,
which is yours, I believe.
Yes, it is. Now, I've got an interesting one. This isn't quite news. This is an article that turned up on Computer World this very morning, in fact. A discussion of web-based office applications, of which there are a number around at the moment, and how they are competing with the big granddaddy of them all, Microsoft Office. In particular, they're talking about Think3 Inc. Now, Think3 have been around for a while, and they do a very nice Java-based application suite of a word processor, spreadsheet, and PowerPoint. My bad. Presentation software. That looks very much like the Microsoft alternatives. But the main advantage is that they're served through a web browser. So you have remotely hosted applications. Hmm. You can also have standalone versions that run on your own computer. And they, in fact, do quite a wide variety of products. You can actually walk into Staples right now and buy a standalone copy of Think3 Office. You can also get it free online with some limited storage space right now from their website. Now, this article has been discussing how well they've been doing in cutting away business from Microsoft Office, and the case study they've been using is of Ryder System Inks. Now, this is the trucking firm you can rent trucks from, specifically the American division. Now, they make $6.3 billion a year, which is a fairly hefty sum. That is a fairly big amount. Yeah. But the majority of their staff don't really use word processing products that much. They have no real need of a big full-on office application, but enough people needed to do it every now and again to warrant spending some money.
But not spending $300 per person.
Exactly. Now, this is, of course, $300 per machine, per user.
Oh.
So it's a lot of bloody cash when you have a couple of thousand people who need access to this. So instead, they decided to go for 200 concurrent user licenses of the Think3 Server Edition. And that's £30 a person per year. That comes out to about $6,000, which sounds like a lot, but is almost nothing compared to the amount of money that would have to be spent.
But bearing in mind, you'd be spending 10 times that much for...
Most importantly, because these 200 licenses are going to serve over 7,000 workers because of the very light usage levels. So, this is a situation where this remote, not remote working, but remote applications works really, really well. Mm. Now, there are many contenders for this kind of crown for web-based office. The two most popular ones are Zoho Office, which I have used, it's okay, and Google Docs, which I wrote part of my dissertation on. Both are perfectly fine. And
you guys wrote the dissertation on it, or wrote the dissertation with it?
With it. I would have loved to have done it on it, but only bits, though. But they're perfectly good pieces of software.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is that Microsoft make $12 billion from Office a year. Now, that's, you know, quite a lot of cash, and a lot of it is from small to medium sized businesses who are forced to pay basically the same rates as big businesses, okay, despite less usage and so on and so forth. However, in the Western world, ThinkFree have... take a guess. How many customers ThinkFree have for their small to medium business edition?
20.
Exactly.
Whoa!
20 editions.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, only 20 with about 100 users each. Now, that's pretty damn pathetic, especially at $30 a person. That's almost nothing. They do a lot more with big... mostly public institutions like libraries. There is a mention in here of... Wait, edit out the pause. I've lost the bloody rest of that. The Los Angeles Public Library, who for a long time used a rather rubbish 300 licenses for 2,200 public access computers, and they had to use these minimal number of licenses by remote desktop using Citrix. Now, I don't know if any of you have used Citrix, but it's an absolute pain in the backside if you're using a lot of users jumping around a lot. It's okay if you're doing a lot of work on it, but it meant that they had a lot of people who were strolling into the library looking to use the software and couldn't because someone else was. So they are switching all 2,200 PCs over to a dedicated ThinkFree license. Now, it's these, as I said, these low-volume users, people who aren't going to write more than a letter. Yeah. They don't need the big, for example, the big business intelligence lock-ins of Excel. You don't need the big fancy displays of presentation. You don't need those horrible smart tags of Microsoft Word. These are the kinds of areas where... these web-based office suites are important.
That's one thing I know you've said about Google Docs when we've talked about it a few months back. It's just simple. You write text, you can make bold, italics, underline. You can't do all that much else, but for the most part, that's all you need.
Yes, it's very true. I mean, the way Word and Excel and PowerPoint work is that to sell you a new version, of course, they need shiny features. And so over the years, they've become more and more
shiny,
built up. Yeah. Yes. And this isn't a bad thing. I mean, they're, for what they are, they're pretty good pieces of software. Now, this isn't an opinion of mine, but I think this things like ThinkFree and Google Docs are the way forward, as opposed to suites such as OpenOffice and Abbey Word and things like that. Most importantly for small to medium businesses here. Now, I know, Ben, you have plenty of opinions with web-based applications.
I kind of don't trust them, bearing in mind, for example, that right now I don't have an internet connection at home, for which I will never, ever forgive Dan.
Sorry.
But I much prefer being able to rely on my own machine, having all the software, no matter whether or not I can connect to the internet.
However, surely the things like the collaboration features of these web-based products, so instead of having to pass around loads of documents that are badly versioned, badly authored, and so on and so forth, and desperately trying to merge them together, where instead you could all edit the same document at the same time, where it is going through a proper version control system and every change is marked to a particular author. So really there are more benefits there, especially in an office environment where you're not going to have the magic of missing connections. And you're also going to have some kind of guarantee that your data is going to be safe.
That's fair enough.
But then again, I don't know whether it is going to be the future, because as you say, it's fairly simple stuff. It's designed for people who occasionally use software for writing the old letter, etc. But quite a lot of businesses that do have office licenses use them to a greater degree. They use them for their invoicing, they use them for mail merging documents and sending them out. And I think that things like Google Docs and ThinkFree are a little too simple for some company, for the greater majority of companies that use Office.
Well, you're never going to replace packages like Office that are very, very powerful and do their thing correctly. He mentions here he's never going to replace Excel in his accounting department, obviously. However, Google Docs is a bad example because it is incredibly simplistic. ThinkFree is a much more developed piece of software, and you can do pretty much everything you can do in Office in Think3, I mean, without some of the more complicated stuff. I think you mentioned mail merge, and that's a very important point in Word, because that's often used for mail shots and things like that.
That's something that's very important to offices, certainly.
Especially small businesses. So I'm not saying we're going to replace all of these things. However, in many, many cases, you just simply don't need to be spending the money and having the complexity of these pieces of software. Now, one of the major disadvantages of web-based software is, of course, that you do require the old internet connection. Now, this is a bit useless if you're taking your laptop out on the road and you need to write a document or something like that, to which I am going to subtly include a second news article into my own one. With the release of Google Gears last week, a couple of weeks ago now. Now, Google Gears is a clever little piece of software that allows you to run certain Google applications when you have no web connection. At the moment, just Google Reader. Now, they're not the first people to do this. Think3, as I said, have a perfectly good offline reader. And more importantly, Firefox 3 will have built-in support for offline apps through their support of the magical new HTML version 5, which is being ratified as we speak by the WG, whatever it stands for, the Web Hypertext Application Tech Work Group.
Really?
Try saying that 12 times fast. But basically, what we're seeing is a grow in the infrastructure for developing these products from their simple basis into more and more developed pieces of software.
Yeah.
Do these big monolithic pieces of software like Office, are they seeing their end? And personally, I think there's a big possibility there is. Maybe not their end, but losing their dominance.
Personally, you're not going to convince me to stop using LaTeX for my documents. But I can see that it's maybe, for many circumstances, Google Documents is all you need.
But it's all well and good having Firefox 3 supporting HTML5. I don't know whether that's actually going to happen, because much like Firefox 2 didn't have all the things that were...
Oh no, this is a confirmed feature. Mark Finkel is heading up the development of it.
The problem... but then again, do things like Safari 3 have support?
Well, what I'm saying is, obviously, Firefox especially being... I mean, Firefox is second, but it's still very long way behind Internet Explorer. I'm saying is that there is a framework that is building up, that is growing. I mean, Google Gears is barely alpha, let alone beta. I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen over the next 2 years, but we're seeing the seeds of a possible big growth.
I perfectly agree with you. I think that there's going to be quite a lot more internet-based applications to come. I've got a feeling that there's going to be less focus on these huge apps. Like for example, OpenOffice is huge. Office itself is huge, is even bigger.
Can I try and coin a new term? Monolithware.
Yeah. Monolithware. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Office 2007 is not quite as big as those previous versions. But anyway, I do think that there's... Yeah, you're mulling that over.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out different combinations. Yeah.
Yes. Gigantiware.
Yeah.
I was going for Softenith or something. It didn't really quite work.
No. Anyway, I was going to say it's going to be quite... I think there is going to be quite a lot more focus on less huge programs and more kind of... A bit like having a remote server that holds all the software, much like in Office scenarios, much like in university, where you've got all the software, all the applications stored on a central server, and then all the computers access it. I think that maybe we're building up to that. Maybe we're building up to a global version of the small business central computer.
Like Sun tried to do with NFS 25 years ago.
Yes,
but that was 25 years ago. This was back.
Yes, nowadays, of course, we have a much better. The internet is much stronger. There is a lot more internet connectivity in just people's homes, let alone businesses, and it's faster. Now, a lot of people said we're in the second dot-com bubble, admittedly lot less precarious than the first one, but it could all fall flat on its face.
It could do. You could have a mass explosion, especially with the whole sort of terrorism, in inverted commas, type scenarios that that the Americans can bring up. In fact, the US trying to hold rights to the root servers.
Yes.
Things like that. Basically, there might well be a breakdown in the internet, not necessarily in the World Wide Web.
We'll finish off with, what has everyone been drinking this week, tea-wise? To round off our regular segment.
Yes, I'm sorry. Is it true you use uranium in your chili sauce?
So that's what makes it so special.
Well, I have been drinking at the recommendation of Dan. I believe you mentioned you quite liked it, so I decided to try some. Some unspecified lemon and ginger drink.
It is Twinings Infusions lemon and ginger tea.
Infusion being one of my new favourite words.
Yes, it as recommended by Stephen Pry, is it? Or
he does the Twining adverts.
Yes,
I know, he's done lemon and ginger.
He's been paid to endorse it pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
And you can understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
No, I personally am also a great fan of the lemon and ginger. I'm not a herbal tea man, but I like something with some kick, and it's a good tea.
Mine's kind of watery, a bit twang.
Yeah. Mine seems to be a bit more... I agree, watery with a bit of twang. It's not particularly...
lemony.
No, it's a little underwhelming.
Needs a bit of sip.
It's not going to be your full-bodied tea.
No,
as we discussed last.
Well, I'm disappointed by the distinct lack of a lemon taste in it.
I can imagine something like lemon and ginger going well if you just put a dollop of honey in anyway and then pick it up.
Oh yeah, putting a bit of sugar or a bit of honey in it would sort of make it a much fuller drink, in my opinion.
I personally like it during these because it soothes my throat and stops me coughing up my guts every 10 minutes.
Mm. It's a bit like a liquid Strepsil.
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't try and inhale your own intestines, to be honest.
It does hurt. Anyway, we'd better finish off there, so we'll start with Chris. Say goodbye.
Goodbye!
Richard.
Goodbye.
Benjamin.
Bye.
And me. Bye!
Login was presented by Dan Kosser, Ben Ali, and Rich Jeffrey, and is a production of Termisog, the University of Plymouth Computing Society.